everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. And here we are in a new year, 2015, January 6th, and baby, it's cold outside here in New York. But I just love it when I got up this morning and saw the white flakes falling. It's just a lovely, magical feeling, and it's great when you don't have to go out in it. You can just look at it and stay cozy inside because it is cold out there. And actually, it's warming up. I was looking at the thermometer before. It was 18 degrees Fahrenheit, and now it's a balmy 21. Anyway, it's fun. I love the seasons, and it's a great opportunity to change up what you're eating. This is a good time for soup, right? And I wanted to talk a little bit about soup because it's January and it's cold. Maybe in places where it's not so cold, you're not in the mood for soup, but there are soups for all seasons. But I wanted to mention, I'm going to be talking a bit about what's gone on in the past year, kind of like a year in review. And about a year ago, I interviewed Mark Reinfeld. And it's his birthday today. He's a chef, so I thought I'd mention him, give him a shout-out. Happy birthday, Mark. And if you remember, he had just come out with a new book called Soups On. And I can't recommend enough making your own soup. It's the most comforting, wonderful thing on a cold day. And when you make it yourself, not only is it a lot cheaper, but it's far more delicious than if you buy it in a can. And there are so many issues with cans these days. I am just stressing out all the time when I am ordering food. I like to buy a lot of food in bulk, and I like to do the best I can at buying foods that don't have to be refrigerated, buy them in large quantities and have them shipped. And it's easier that way, so I don't have to think about them. So this whole can issue with the BPA in the lining has caused me a great deal of stress. And there are some companies that don't contain BPA anymore, but you wonder, if they took the BPA out, what did they put in its place? So I always prefer to use glass and buy my food in glass if it's something that isn't fresh. When it comes to soup, I just prefer to buy the soup, not buy the soup, but buy the fresh ingredients and make my own soup. And that kind of alleviates the whole can crisis. So Mark Reinfeld has some great soup recipes in his book, Soups On. We have some wonderful ones at Responsible Eating and Living. And, you know, it just takes a little practice. Soup is simple. I always start with the same ingredients, onion, carrot, celery, chop them up, and let them start cooking in the bottom of the pan and then the bottom of the soup pot, and then you add whatever you want, beans, grains, water, of course, and you can flavor it up with tomatoes or tomato paste, lemon, herbs and spices, and get creative. If you want it creamy, you can add some nuts to it and blend it up. There's so many different variations. There's like a gazillion ways to have cozy, delicious soup, and it just like anything, it takes a little practice. But there's soup's really forgiving. You know, you don't have to stick with exact quantities of anything. You can just have fun with it. Now, while we're talking about soup, makes me think of one particular ingredient that I like to add to my soup or to a lot of other foods, and that's turmeric. And turmeric is known for many wonderful nutritional effects on our health, and you've probably heard of a lot of them. I know that when I was going through my cancer treatment back in 2006-2007, my doctors had me take 3,600 milligrams a day of curcumin. Now, curcumin is the important ingredient in turmeric that gives it its great properties, and you can eat turmeric fresh. Kind of hard to come by, but there are more supermarkets that are offering it today. You can get turmeric as a dry spice, which is what I prefer to use. And then if you want to get the benefits of the curcumin in a more intense dose, then you can get supplements that actually extract that key ingredient, the curcuminoids that are in the turmeric. And as I said, I took 3,600 milligrams a day of curcumin during my cancer treatment. It's supposed to have tremendous anti-cancer fighting properties. And so you may be wondering, do you want to have this curcumin, or do you just want to use turmeric in your food? You know, it really depends on what your issues are and what you need. Turmeric is wonderful in soup, and I just like to put it in all the time. Now, 1 tablespoon of turmeric will give you 136 milligrams of curcumin. And it's kind of hard to eat a tablespoon of turmeric a day because it's very bitter, but you can sprinkle it in soups and put it in other foods and get a good amount of turmeric because it's good for you. Now, one of my listeners forwarded me a link about some recent research on turmeric. So not only is it great at boosting your immune system, it's also good for a variety of different skin ailments, but there's been some recent research on rats, and I have to apologize profusely because I'm not someone who supports or believes in animal testing, but when the research is there, it is interesting to see the results. And they found that it appears that turmeric has DHA. And this is something that we're talking a lot more about because people are concerned about getting omega-3 fatty acids in their foods. Omega-3 fatty acids work in a ratio with omega-6 fatty acids, and we need them for a lot of things for good health. And one of the things is to get our brains functioning properly, and we need it more and more as we age. So turmeric might be really good for us to help prevent things like Alzheimer's and dementia. And I'm looking forward to more research coming out. But in the meantime, make soup and add turmeric to your soup. It's a good thing. Of course, some people are allergic to turmeric, and people with a variety of different health issues like gallstones or bile duct dysfunction may have a problem with turmeric, so you'll have to be wary if you have particular issues like that. And like I said, my oncologist recommended taking high doses of curcumin, but there are some that believe that turmeric interferes with chemotherapy for breast cancer patients. So you need to do your own research and see what's best for you. Meanwhile, I like turmeric. Now, I hope you had a great New Year's and fun holiday period. I know I did, and it took me a few days to recover afterwards. I was exhausted. And I want to give a shout-out to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Is anybody out there listening from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? I go there every now and then for New Year's Eve. I have an old friend who throws a big party. And what was really exciting about going to Bethlehem this year, we didn't get to the wonderful Vegan Treats Bakery, which is just amazing. We've been there before. We were planning on going, but we didn't get there. But I was really delighted to discover that there are a number of places where you can eat plant-based very happily. It's always exciting to go to a town and discover that you're not the only one who wants to eat plants. And unfortunately, I didn't get to take advantage of what's offered. There's a place called Shankara Vegan Restaurant, and they were offering a prefixed full vegan buffet on New Year's Day. And I really wanted to go to that, and I'm sorry I didn't, but I'm so glad it exists. And then there were other restaurants. We stopped at a place called Stations Cafe, and they're a simple little cafe that had coffee and cake and ice creams and things. But they actually had vegan food on the menu. They had the word vegan. They had a number of vegan burgers. And it was really fun and a nice atmosphere and just so exciting to see the change. So I'm really looking forward to what 2015 brings in terms of plant foods. And I just wanted to bring up a sad note before we go a little further, and that is January, oftentimes people pass a little more frequently, I think, in January than other times of the year. And Norman Phelps left us on January 2nd. I had the opportunity of interviewing him in 2013. I'm going to be putting that interview on my homepage shortly. He was an author, a Lantern Books author, and we love the publisher Lantern Books. And he was a tremendous animal rights activist and a very kind, compassionate man. And we're sorry to see him go. Now, what I wanted to do today is talk about some of the shows that we've had in the past year, and especially talk about the ones that I think were the best, or that the books that I read that were the best. So can we jump in and talk about some of those? And I would love to hear from you if you've read any of these books, or if I've missed any books that you think were better, you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org. Now, I love reading. And I find, for me, it's a way that I relax. So I work a lot all day long on the computer, and then when I want to relax, there's nothing like reading a book. And I know people are going the way of soft copies on Kindles and things. I still prefer an old-fashioned book. But I do read books on pads and computers, etc. Sometimes it's more convenient. But I do love hard copy books, even paperbacks. Okay, so the few that I wanted to talk about. Let's see. Let's talk about The Chain. Do you remember? I interviewed Robin Lamont earlier in the year about her fiction story, The Chain. Have any of you gotten to read it? It was a very fascinating thriller about factory farming and people that worked inside a factory farm. And it was a fiction story, of course, but what was great about it is it's very hard for us to get inside a factory farm and really know what's going on. In fact, it's illegal for people to do that. You may remember talking to the interview last week with Mark DeVries, because he's using drones just to be able to see what's going on with factory farms. And we can find out from people that work there or have worked there, and we can glean some information from them, but we don't really know what's going on a day-to-day basis. And this was an excellent story that gave us a feeling of what could be going on. And I think if you want to get people interested in this topic, but they seem very defensive about the subject of eating animals or not eating animals, this might be a helpful book, because it's a fictional book, and that can open the door to talk about the realities of what's going on. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun read, and in a way it was, because it was a thriller, but the story, ultimately, what it's about is very scary, not very nice. Okay, another book that I really loved was Farming with Native Beneficial Insects. You remember my interview with Eric Lee Mader? Now, this is from the Xerces Society, and I just was filled with so much hope when I read this book, because the basic premise is how we can grow food and not destroy the environment. And I love when I discover people who are doing it and finding out how to do it even better. And what I loved about this book was not only do they know how to bring health and life back into the soil so that we can grow nutritious food, but the way they do it is stunningly beautiful. And if you look at the fields that they've worked on, the farms that they've worked on, they are so picturesque. Rather than these treeless, barren areas that where everything is the same, these are lush areas with wildflowers and native plants. And this is where nature thrives, where bugs thrive, but the bugs are doing good jobs. They're not eating your crops. They're eating the weeds, the unfriendly crops. They're keeping the soil alive. And with a little knowledge, you can, as a farmer, learn how to do this without using toxic pesticides and herbicides and bring life back to the soil. I was really inspired by that book. Now, another book, now this was really surprising to me. The Gentle Barn. I interviewed Ellie Lux in August of last year, and it was a very rare occasion where I didn't have a chance to read her book. And I don't like to do that. I never do that, in fact. I always read the book first when I'm going to be talking to an author. And I didn't have a chance to. I just thumbed through the pages and read like a page or two here and there, but I really didn't. And I told myself that I would read her book sometime later. And, you know, you get busy. And I have so many books here that are piled up that I haven't gotten to. And not too long ago, all of a sudden, I was not in the best of spirits and kind of feeling frustrated about where I was going and the work that I was doing. You know, it's hard being an activist. And there's a lot of burnout and frustration, and I was experiencing some of that. And the book called me. It called me. And I thought, I have to read The Gentle Barn right now. And that's what I did. I read it for the rest of the evening, and I was so taken with it. The story is incredible. So if you may remember Ellie Lux, she was abused as a young child, sexually abused, and her parents really didn't believe her or want to believe her. And she found solace. She found peace when she was out in nature working with animals, and she had a dream that she would create what she ended up calling the Gentle Barn, a place for animals, a place to rescue them and nurture them. And this book, The Gentle Barn, is her memoir about how she created the Gentle Barn. And it's a beautiful story, and I just couldn't believe chapter after chapter how many challenges and adversity she had. It was incredible. And yet, she persevered. And if you remember the interview, she had such a lovely, soft-spoken voice. She's a gentle soul. And yet, she had this powerful drive and this determination and really didn't listen to what people were telling her about how crazy she was in saving all these animals. And many times she questioned herself whether she was a hoarder, because there are people who do, unfortunately, hoard animals, and they don't take very good care of them. So she created the Gentle Barn, which is now this beautiful sanctuary in California. They do a lot of rescues. They've saved a lot of animals, and just wonderful stories about the animals she saved and ultimately healed herself. And the message that I got was something we all need to hear, something we all need to remember. And I think it's especially timely during the new year, at the beginning of the year. The message is to follow your dream, follow your bliss. You need to do what you are called to do. Now, for her, it was to create this animal sanctuary. That's not something I care to do, want to do. I have a great deal of respect for the people that have created animal sanctuaries. What's great about them is not really the quantity of animals that they're saving. They're saving individuals, and for those individual animals, it's a wonderful thing. But people really learn a lot when they go to a sanctuary, when they hear the individual stories, and it has a powerful impact on people's lives and the way they want to carry on their own lives. A lot of people have decided they don't want to eat animals anymore when they go to a sanctuary, and they meet these personalities, these characters, these individuals. Anyway, the point is that we need to know what our dream is, and sometimes that's a particular challenge. and to go for it. And it can be very scary. It can be very hard. But when I read a story like Ellie Lux and realize what she's been through, it makes my life seem a lot simpler, a lot easier, and help me refocus and gave me inspiration to do more of what's important to me and what I want to do in terms of getting people educated about plant foods, because I think we can make a tremendous difference on the planet when people just eat more delicious plant foods. Anyway, I love the book, The Gentle Barn. So if you're looking for something inspirational and really a good read, I really recommend that one. Yep. Okay, another one. Well, let's talk about two at the time. There are a couple of Lantern books. One of them is The Oxen at the Intersection, and the author is Patrice Jones, and I had her on twice this year to talk about that book and some other topics. And then the other book is The Elephants in the Room by Martin Rowe. And Martin Rowe is the co-founder of Lantern Books, and he's written a number of books. And this book, The Elephants in the Room, was exceptionally good. And it's a difficult read in some ways. I had a dictionary with me a lot because there were words that I didn't know that I had to look up. But he brought up some very good points. And in this story, he parallels the lives of two Kenyan women. Now, one woman he knew very well, Wangari Maathai. Maybe you've heard of her. He and Martin Rowe and his wife, Mia McDonald, had worked quite a bit with her and were working on writing, helping her write her memoirs. And she ended up winning a Nobel Prize for the environment. She helped she helped plant, I think, about 50 million trees now is the count with her Greenbelt movement. And he kind of paralleled her life with the life of another woman, Daphne Shedrick, who also was from Kenya. But Wangari Maathai was black, and Daphne Shedrick was white. And they came from very different backgrounds. And although they both believed in environmental sustainability, their approaches were very different, and their privileges, their assumptions were very different. And it was fascinating to read this book. And Martin Rowe questioned his own beliefs along the way, and it kind of helped me look at my own. Sometimes, especially an activist, we make assumptions about how we think the world can be better. If we're going into another country, for example, and we don't understand their culture, there are things that we think might be better for that culture, and we don't have a clue about what we're talking about. And this was very clear, reading about that in this book. In addition, he talks about the exploitation of elephants. And you may have read elephants are going extinct. It's a very sad thing, but there's a tremendous amount of poaching, and there are fewer and fewer of these majestic animals. When I was young, I used to like to collect little elephant trinkets, and I was told if they had their trunk up, they brought better luck, whatever. I'm not sure why I was drawn to them, but I really felt that there was something mystical, something powerful and majestic and beautiful. And I don't really collect much anymore, but I'm still quite fascinated with the elephant, and very, very sad to hear about what we do to them. And I was in the Museum of Natural History a couple of weeks ago, and looking at the dinosaurs and all the extinct animals, imagining that the elephant would be among them very soon. Anyway, The Elephants in the Room, An Excavation. an excellent book. All right. And then the other one by Lantern Books is The Oxen at the Intersection, and that had some similar messages there about activists and how we can make a lot of assumptions and ultimately not make the right choices. That was a very unfortunate story about the oxen, Bill and Lou, at, I think it was the Green Mountain College in Vermont, and they were there pulling some sort of plow of some sort, and one of them was injured, and then the school decided to kill them both and serve them up as hamburger. And Patrice Jones and her organization, the Vine Sanctuary, tried numerous times to find a way to save these animals, offered them sanctuary, offered to pay them, and all kinds of things, all kinds of incentives to save these animals, and it just didn't happen. This is a very sad, sad story, but worth reading, because we really need to face the truth about what's going on and how ignorant we can be so often with our own cultural assumptions. All right, let's bring it over and talk about food, because that's what's really important to me, right? And my three favorite cookbooks this year. One is the Thrive Energy Cookbook, and that was by Brendan Brasier. And I am so thrilled with anything that Brendan Brasier does. He's somebody who walks the walk and runs really fast. He's a two-time Canadian ultramarathon champion and a professional Ironman triathlete, and a really nice guy. And what I love about this Thrive Energy Cookbook, every ingredient has a nutritional purpose, and the food's beautiful. It's stunning. It's really clean, allergen-free. You can't go wrong with this cookbook. It's just clean, delicious food, and put together by Brendan and his associates, and it's meant to give you energy, and he really is an expert when it comes to being really efficient about the food that you eat and getting the most out of it. So that's the healthy side of plant eating, the best of healthy plant eating. And then, you know, if you want to go a little more decadent for a variety of different reasons, there's the book Vegan Tacos. And I interviewed Jason Wyrick, the chef and author of Vegan Tacos. And when I first saw this book, I was like, come on, Vegan Tacos. What can you say about vegan tacos? And it's amazing, actually. This cookbook is one of my favorites. He went into such great detail talking about spices and making a variety of different condiments and the different tortillas that are possible and the grains that you put into them. And it's just delicious reading this book. And it's one of the cookbooks I'm going to go back to a lot. And I don't use cookbooks very often, but I have to get something special out of them. And this is something that has a lot of good information if you like to cook or you like to read about food. If you don't like either, well, I don't think cookbooks are really for you. The last cookbook that is on my best of 2014 list is The Vegan Holiday Cooking from Candle Cafe. And they can do no wrong, the folks at Candle Cafe. They're full of love. They're food is rich and decadent, and I think if you ever want to make a special meal, this is a great cookbook to get involved with making beautiful, luxurious, comforting, cozy food. They know what they're doing there. Otherwise, just go to one of their restaurants, Candle Cafe, Candle 79, Candle West, if you're in Manhattan, and you can afford it. Because it's a bit pricey, but it's really a celebration and well worth it. All right, I think I covered just about all of them, except, oh yes, my favorite doctor, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, came out with a new book, The End of Dieting, this year. And what was fun about that book is my partner Gary and I got to go to the filming of the PBS fundraiser about this book. And we got to be in the audience. And Dr. Fuhrman talked about the book and everything in it that supports his idea that you don't have to diet, that all the diets are worthless. All you need to do is learn the right foods to eat and the wrong food to eat. And most of the right foods that you can eat as much as you want. It's really fun. It's really liberating. And if you invest a little time into it, you learn to love these foods. And I think everybody would be a lot happier and healthier if they followed this plan. Oh, yes, goodness. But it's really, it's hard. I know it's hard, and I know there are people that want to make changes, and here we are. It's a new year, and there's lots of conversations about New Year's resolutions, whether they're a good idea, whether they're not a good idea. I've heard many, many programs and read articles about how people make resolutions at the beginning of the year and they don't keep them. And a lot of people are giving advice on what to do, on how to keep things and how to progress and make changes. And then I heard, I think it was on NPR, maybe you heard it, they were talking about how it's good to make changes at the new year, and they are effective. People tend to, they may not do everything that they want to do, but it does, it is a great opportunity to make improvements and to make change. And, you know, I have this kind of spiritual, philosophical thought about time and how there really isn't any time. There is no time. That's why I like to remember when I'm feeling rushed and hectic and that I don't have the time to do all the things that I want to do. I have to remind myself that there is enough time to do everything. And when we think about a calendar year, how meaningful is it, the new year? It doesn't really mean anything, but we've all agreed as a society that things are going to start new. And there's something really powerful about that. I like to start every day when I wake up at, like it's new, like the day is a blank palette that I can fill in with what I want and try to the best of my ability to let go of anything that's happened before that hasn't been so pleasant. Every day is a new, fresh day. Well, every year is a much powerful opportunity to make change and to make ourselves even better. So I don't know what you've committed to or what you're thinking of. I've kind of made a list myself. One of the things that I've done is thought about what I want to do with my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, and we're coming up with some new projects. I'm not going to tell you about them until we have some results, but I'm very excited about them. And I hope you have some great changes that you're thinking about for yourself, because I really think that's what we're here for. We're here to learn and get better, get improve. And if you are considering changing to a plant-based diet, if you're not eating entirely plants and you want to stop eating whatever it may be, meat, chicken, fish, maybe dairy products, and you're struggling, there are so many resources out there to help you. And if you want to get to a better place in terms of food and diet, you can always email me at info@realmeals.org, and I'd be happy to help you any way I can, send you a list of resources and places that places, books, websites, whatever, that may address your concerns. There's so much information out there. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's been invented for you, for the good. I think that's my list of the best of 2014. Very good. Okay. Oh, I wanted to mention, back with turmeric, something that I left out, which was really fun, and that is turmeric is a bright orangey-yellow color, and if you've worked with it before, you'll find that it stains. It gives your fingers an unfortunate yellow color. It can spill on things and stain things with yellow, a yellow-orange color. But you can use that to your advantage. And over the holidays, I made some gingerbread cookies. I just posted the recipe for these gingerbread cookies. They're gluten-free, of course. And They were really decadent because I made a sugar glaze to decorate the cookies. And again, I have to always underline these things, but these are treats. These are for special occasions. This isn't something that I like to eat every day. But they were fun for the holidays, and it was fun to... I had some cookie cutters from a long time ago that I never, ever used. Have you ever bought anything for the kitchen and not used it? Well, that's rare for me because I tend to overuse everything that I get for my kitchen. But I did have some cookie cutters, and I finally used them, and it was really fun. So I made a sugar icing. This is just confectioner sugar and a little non-dairy milk. And I wanted to make some colors. And I will not use artificial food colorings. Okay, I won't go that far when I'm making a treat. No, 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 no. Now, turmeric has a wonderful yellow-orange color, and I added a little bit to my sugar glaze, and it made a lovely yellow color that I used to decorate my cookies. You have to be careful because turmeric can have a very bitter flavor, but if you just use just enough, the sugar in the icing will overwhelm the slight bitter flavor in the turmeric, but the color is amazing. And then I used red beet powder to make a reddish pink color. So I had white, yellow, and a pinkish red color to decorate my cookies. And I didn't have to use FDA red dye number, whatever, this and that, all those evil artificial colors. I like that, using food to do good, fun things. Now, some of the other treats that I made over the holidays, and I listed these recipes up at the Responsible Eating and Living website just recently. One is a gluten-free pie crust where I use all-purpose gluten-free flour. Have you ever made a pie crust? Now, it's a little intimidating, although it's not hard. When you're using wheat flour, I think it's relatively easy. But again, just like anything else, you need to practice. And when you add wheat and a fat, like a butter or a oil, and a little water in the right amounts, it makes a very pliable dough, like Play-Doh. And you can flour your surface, flour your rolling pin, and roll out this dough and make it relatively thin, and then carefully pick it up and put it in a pie dish, trim the edges, and you have a lovely pie crust. It's a lot more challenging with gluten-free flours. And many more people are moving towards gluten-free diets for one reason or another. Some people absolutely need to if they have celiac disease or some kind of gluten intolerance. Other people think they feel better without wheat. It may be true. It may be a placebo effect. But I just like finding out what I can do with all kinds of flours out there and making the most of them. So I did make a wonderful gluten-free pie crust recipe that you can roll. And that's the great thing about it, because the thing about gluten is what holds things together. And when you don't have it in your flour, you need to have something else in there that can glue everything together. Now, a lot of times we add a plant gum, like xanthan gum, and I use Bob's Red Mill flour, which is mostly made from garbanzo beans. Crazy, right? Garbanzo beans and some starches, and makes a really phenomenal pie crust that you can roll. And with that, I made a pumpkin pie, and I made a double crust apple pie, and everything was beautiful and delicious. But you know, all of these treats, gingerbread cookies and pumpkin pie and apple pie, they're really a little much. And after the holidays, I was really feeling toxic. And, okay, so I'm all cleaned up now, but I still like to have sweet things from time to time. We all do. That's natural. And I came back to the raw pies, the raw desserts. Have you ever made a raw dessert? I was on an all-raw diet for about 2 years, and I keep telling myself I have to go back and make some of all of those wonderful recipes when I was not cooking food, because some of them were really spectacular. And the thing that I love the most on the raw diet are the raw desserts. And I just made what I call a hazelnut cream pie. And the raw desserts are like the simplest things, and raw pies are the simplest things. And you can make them, and they'll look beautiful, and they taste so rich and luxurious. And what I love is they're just whole foods. They're just raw nuts, raw seeds, and dried fruit. Really, that's about it. And when you put them together, stunning and so, so delicious. So this particular pie, I used dates, raisins, shredded coconut, and sunflower seeds. I used pumpkin seeds. And blended that up together. It's kind of fun when you put it all in a food processor and you put these ingredients, dried fruit and dried nuts and seeds, raw nuts and seeds, and you blend them up together. And you just keep pulsing and blending. At some point, they start to clump together and form a dough. Now, it's not a dough that you can roll out like I was just talking about before, but it's a dough that you can easily press into a pie plate and make it as thin as you like and then kind of decorate or trim the edges. And then you don't even have to clean the food processor. That's what makes this so wonderfully easy, because it's just like one thing that you're making this treat in. And in the same food processor, you can add your mix of more dried fruit and nuts, whatever it is that you're making. In this case, I used hazelnuts, dates, a little coconut oil, and some flavoring like cinnamon and nutmeg. And then I was thinking, oh, and dried apricots too. I put them in there too. And I soaked the dried fruit for a little bit so that it would blend into a nice creamy filling. And dried fruit can be a little sweet for me, really sweet. And I thought I'll add some cocoa powder to that, because the cocoa powder is bitter and it'll mellow out the sweetness. So I made this pie absolutely fabulous. And I'm looking forward to making another one again. But it's something that, you know, you don't have to feel guilty about eating. And it feels good going down, really. Okay, we have a few more minutes left. And I don't remember, did I talk about pineapple last week? I was trying to check my notes and I don't remember, but what I wanted to mention was hearing about this company that's starting to make leather-like fabrics from pineapple leaves. This is so exciting because, for me, it's all about eliminating the animal from the equation, eliminating the animal from products that we use on a regular basis. So if we could make leather, let's say, and make it without the animal, and make it without toxic petrochemicals, for example, wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? So this company is working on making fabric from pineapple leaves. And I'm starting to think if they do it with pineapple leaves, they probably can do it with lots of other leaves as well. And they're making shoes and bags, and it's really a wonderful thing. The only thing that I'm concerned about, this particular company, I'm looking for their name. I remember their website was something like ananas in French is pineapple. There we go. ananas-anam.com. ananas-anam. ananas-anam. New materials for a new world. And they appear to have a sustainable focus, which is great. The only concern is that foods that we get from other countries. It's really hard to know how the people who are growing and harvesting the foods, how they're being treated. And there have been a lot of stories about pineapple growers and not being treated very well. So I would hope that this company that's making these new fabrics out of pineapple leaves are working with pineapple growers that are being good to their workers. Pineapple. And other than that, pineapple is another healthy, delicious treat. So it's great to get the fruit. And then the leaves that normally would be thrown away, obviously they could be composted and that would be fine too, but to be able to get a product out of them where somebody could profit is fascinating, and I can't wait to hear more about it. It's just like these new companies that are coming out, we're hearing more and more about Beyond Beef, for example, and Impossible Foods that are creating burgers, that are creating meat without the animal. And it's these disruptive technologies that are going to change the world. Personally, for me, I want to eat organic, minimally processed plant foods for most of the time. But if we're really going to change the world, we need for people to realize that they don't need to kill animals to get everything that they want. And that means if they want to have the foods that they enjoy eating, even meat-like foods or egg-like foods or milk-like foods or cheese-like foods, we're going to be able to do it without using animals and do it in a much more sustainable and cost-effective way. And I'm really excited about this. And I think in a few decades we're going to be looking back and saying, oh, my God, we used animals to make these things? Just crazy. It can't come any sooner. I really look forward to those times, don't you? Whew! And in fact, we were just reading today about somebody who's come up with a product that simulates bacon grease for people who like the feeling and flavor of bacon grease, and it's made from coconut oil and a bunch of flavors. So all it takes is an open mind, some creativity, and a little investment, financial investment, and you can start changing the world with simple little products. I'm very excited about that. And you may remember the Swingin' Gourmets. Now, the Swingin' Gourmets is a duo, myself and Gary DeMattei, and we created a musical review where we share our stories about how plant-based foods have changed our lives in wonderful ways. For me, I tell my cancer story during the show, and Gary tells his story about losing about 100 pounds when he had struggled with weight most of his life. It's really a beautiful story, I think. And we sing a lot of wonderful songs. And we're continually working on the story and other stories that the Swingin' Gourmets can share with the world. But what we want to do is, in a very fun and joyful way, show the power of plant foods. And we'll be doing more of that in 2015. I'm really looking forward to that because I like music, and I really think that music has tremendous power in communicating. I think we naturally, it reaches a part of us that we don't really even need to have words to understand. Music can be very, very powerful. So I think it can help us in our activism, in helping people change, if we do it with music. Don't you? I do. So in a little while, at the end of the program, I'm going to share a little treat for you. And that's why I wanted to let you know about the Swing Gourmets. Now, coming up in 2014, you can tell me, 2015, excuse me, what it is that you are interested in hearing about on It's All About Food, but I just want to let you know what you'll be getting so far in the future. Now, next week, we're going to be talking to Peter Laufer, and he's written a book, Truth Behind Food Labeling, and he's an independent journalist, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say, because I think he's uncovered some really fascinating information about food from other countries, and whether we're getting what we think we are getting. And I really don't know the answer yet, because I haven't read his book and I haven't spoken to him yet. So I think we're going to all learn together next week. And then after that, we have Matthew Glover and Jane Land, and they created this thing last year called, I don't even know if I can say it. It's Veganuary. Yeah, Veganuary. And that's where they encourage people to commit to going vegan during the month of January. So if you've made a commitment like that or a resolution, you might consider visiting the Veganuary site or listen to my interview with the founders next week and see how they can help you keep that commitment. And I think their ultimate goal is once you discover how wonderful it is and how delicious it is and how not so hard it is, that you'll stick to it, or at least stick to some of it. So that's next week. And I'm working very hard at getting to talk to a number of different people who are really movers and shakers in permaculture and urban agriculture, because we really need to find better ways to grow our food. And we cannot depend on our government. We have to do these things ourselves. And that's why I love finding people who are doing really exciting things in the food world and bringing them on the program. I hope you will like that too. Okay, well, I'm going to close a little early today because I've come to the end of everything that I wanted to talk about. And I hope you visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. You can see the review that I just put up of all the books that I talked about. If there was one in particular that you were interested, you might check out which one that is and link to it. And check out the recipes that we've recently put up. And we'll be adding a lot more in the coming week at responsibleatingandliving.com. All right, I mentioned the Swing Gourmets, and I'm giving you a little treat now because, baby, it's cold outside. Here we've got the Swing Gourmets singing, Baby, It's Cold Outside. And remember, have a delicious week.
Baby, it's cold outside. Take 28.
I've got to go
Baby,
away.
It's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping
been
that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just like
My
ice.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your hurry?
My father will be pacing the
Listen
floor.
Listen to the fireplace
so
roar.
So really I better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't hurry.
Or maybe just a half a drink
Put
more.
Some records on while I
the
pour.
The neighbors might
But
think.
Baby, it's bad out there.
Hey, what's in
no
this
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how
eyes are like starlight
to
now.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Gosh, your hair looks slow.
I ought to say no, no,
you
no,
You mind
sir.
If I move in a little
At
closer?
Least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't
Baby,
say.
Don't hold out.
Oh, but it's cold outside.
But
it's bad out there.
The answer
Ooh,
is
darling, it's cold outside.
This welcome has
I'm
been
lucky that you dropped
so
in.
Nice and warm.
Look out that window, take a look at that
My
storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the
Waves
door.
Waves upon a tropical
My
shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is vicious.
You know, you're delicious.
Well, maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to go
But baby, you'll freeze out there.
Say, lend me
it's
a
It's up
call.
To your knees out there.
You've really been grand.
I thrill when you touch my
but
hand.
Don't you see?
How can you do this thing to
There's
me?
Bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong sorrow.
At least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and died,
I really can't
get over that old